Welcome to the Travelling Senorita, episode 184. I'm back from Perth and I'm in my hometown area of Northern Rivers, where there are so many characters that I haven't met yet. And I've been doing this podcast for a lot of years and writing for the local tourism body for a lot of years as well. And I still keep meeting fascinating people, from entrepreneurs to environmentalists to advocates. We've had a lot of them on the podcast, from Mandy Nolan and people like that. And then the other day I was talking to an old friend and she was saying, oh my God, you have to get this wonderful woman on your podcast. And I said, tell me about it. Tell me a little bit more. Can't do any more distillers. Can't do any more. And she said, no, this is a different scenario. And as we were talking, this young lady who is actually a bit older than I thought, we're heading towards late 30s, is Trinity Maddox. And she is actually walking the National Trail in Australia. Now, if you don't know what that is, we're going to find out a whole lot about it today. But before we do that, I dug a little deeper and I love that she has Mexican heritage and just the connection there and also growing up in WA. So please welcome Trinity. Hello.
Hi, Kylie. How are you going?
Oh, good. I feel like we're like sisters from another mister.
Yeah, it's been pretty fun so far.
Like,
yeah.
We've been in my house for like 30 minutes and we're like super connected. And I'm like, the first person you have to meet is Eri Perez. So we're lining that up. Now, tell me a little bit about, I guess, mum and dad, and mum's from Mexico, dad's from Australia.
Correct.
And how they met and then how they transpired to come back to Australia.
Sure. So mum was actually studying at a university in Mexico. She was studying dance, and dad was studying there, doing exchange as well. And he was part of the music group for the university, and the dance group and the small orchestra would often do shows in small villages around the university. And so they got chatting on the bus, and I guess that's where things started.
Wow.
They ended up getting together. They had my two older sisters in Mexico.
Yep.
And then they made the move back to Australia.
So whereabouts in Mexico?
They met in Puebla, and the university is in a small town called Cholula.
So for people that don't know where that is, where is that?
Probably about 2 hours south of Mexico City.
So not going towards Osaka or...
Oaxaca.
Oaxaca.
Yep, yep.
Oh my God, I was in Japan.
It is. It's the state right next to Oaxaca.
Yeah,
yeah.
Got you. Because I haven't actually been there, but I've done areas up to Monterrey, San Miguel and Yucatan areas.
Yeah,
but yeah. Mexico is just such a beautiful country and is always about family, food, connection, fiesta. So do you feel like that is really in your blood as a person?
I do, yeah. I actually lived there throughout my early 20s, and it was one of the most amazing experiences of my life. I really was able to understand my heritage, my culture, my background, made some amazing friends, and really made some really great memories. So,
oh,
yeah.
You've got my dream DNA. You stole it from me. No, that's so cool. So when mum and dad came here, they're in Sydney, then they went to WA.
Correct.
So I guess where you were born, do you feel like you're very a WA girl?
I don't feel a huge connection to WA. I've got a lot of amazing friends there and my upbringing was amazing. But as I got older, I did want to travel a little bit and see what else was out there. A lot of my extended family, so my dad's side, is on the East Coast. And so I was exposed to this area from an early age.
Yeah.
And when I was older and kind of came back through this area, I love it. So, yeah.
So we're fast forwarding to the trail, but also your work with the wildlife, Byron Wildlife Centre.
Yep.
Here in Northern Rivers. But in between your travel and there, because you are a lot older than what you look, that's for sure. What have you been doing?
I've mostly worked in hospitality. I also did social work, but I found that I was struggling with the social work and so fell back into the hospitality industry and was actually working at the Kingscliff Surf Club.
Yeah,
it's the Kudjin Headland Surf Club. And
Best view in town.
I had worked for some amazing bosses. I was managing the cafe there and it was a great working place. And when I gave them notice that I wanted to do this trail, they supported me entirely. And so from the get-go, this has been an amazing experience. Yeah.
So that paints a picture of who you are. I love that the colour of your Mexican culture, and then also a bit of WA, but you're very much embedded in Northern Rivers. Because when you're not doing walking Australia, parts of Australia, you're living out in Yukai, living quite a quiet life.
Yeah.
But that's something exactly within right. That quiet life, and I think this is where we really need to kind of find out what makes Trin tick.
Yeah.
When you're out there and you're living in your home and you know, you're probably thinking I'm going to renovate a kitchen or do whatever, what was it that made you, a lot of people cite the pandemic, but what was it that made you kind of click that you need to do a how many thousand K walk?
5,330.
Okay, so there must be a whole story behind how you got there.
Yeah, so I completed my first multi-day walk in 2018 with my partner at the time. And when we finished that, I loved it so much, I Googled what the longest walk in Australia was. So that's where the seed was planted about the National Trail. And I said to myself, I would love to do that one day. And then I guess over the years, it's always just sort of sat in the background. I was living in Yukai and was saving towards making some updates to the kitchen, and COVID happened, and I guess I just kind of reassessed things and realized that actually I would much prefer to have these experiences over a brand new kitchen. So
actually, you and I need to separate immediately because I'm selling everything for experiences. So you're really bad at doing it on me right now. Quick, Greg's coming. Okay, so let's say I'm a decade or so older than you. A lot of the people I know now are, and for a long time, have been going to the Camino Trail, right? The pilgrim trail that you can start in France and ends in Spain, parts of Portugal. And even more so, I think post the pandemic, everyone's racing over to do the trail and parts of it. You searched pretty much that in Australia. I mean, yep. It's not a pilgrim walk per se, but what's the history behind that trail walk?
Yeah, so this trail has a lot of history. It follows old stock routes. A lot of the roads were actually built by people who were trying to access gold mines or tin mines. And they were used for, they were cattle routes. And so it really was, when you're walking through it, you can see the history of this country.
Because we didn't really have a train.
No, and
we still don't.
we still don't. And there's a lot of the roads that you can actually see that they had to put hand drill or hand chip away at certain rocks to make the carriages go through with these horses.
Wow.
So there are remnants of that still. It's incredible when you walk past and see those kind of things.
So this is why, I mean, this National Trail, obviously people walk it all the time.
I haven't come across a lot of people, most people can choose to do sections because there are 12 sections. So people might do a section here or there. They might just do a few of the maps, but it's not a lot of people who choose to do the entirety of it.
By foot. So you'd have bike riders?
You can choose to do it either by foot, by bike, or by pack horses. And in the past, they have actually had people do it with camels and donkeys. They just don't allow you to do it with motorized vehicles, and you can't take animals such as dogs or cats because you're going through national parks.
And you pack animals.
Yes. Yeah. Yep.
So you're, you're attractive, you're a beautiful soul, and you know, physically, because of your genetics, are blessed as well. So how, you know, feel the fear and do it anyway. But when you were thinking about this trail and you, you're single now and you're sitting in Yukai, and what sort of things were going in through your head to plan it? Like when fear came up, for example, what would you say to yourself?
When I was planning, you think about everything, and safety is important. I just made sure that I was implementing systems to make sure that I was feeling safe, and also the people I care about and care about me felt okay with it. Because of course there's concerns about, you know, you just don't know what could happen.
You made a really good point. When we were talking off air, you made a really good point, because I've got two sons in Canada at the moment. And, you know, and I was saying to you, oh, you know, one saw a mountain lion, and the other one, I was saying, oh my God, the ice is melting and the bears are coming in a hibernation. And we don't have a bear thing going on in Australia. Yeah. We have lots of other things, but we're so used to our own native flora and fauna.
Yeah.
So you made a really good point about that, because I was telling you that story and you said that's why.
Yes. I am familiar with the animals that are in our country, and I am familiar with our culture. I'm familiar with our language, and I felt that this was going to be a great place to commence this walk. We'll do a big walk on this scale, because
when I said bears, you were like, I would have done it.
I find the thought of bears terrifying.
Except, and so a Canadian would find the thought. I just thought there was a spider. I was just going to say the word spider, and I'm arachnophobic, so I'm super, like, as soon as I say the word, I just freak. Hence why I can't do that walk. But, you know, like deadly snakes and blah, 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 they would go, we're not doing that walk, you know. And it's quite interesting, isn't it, that you get used to what, it makes so much more sense to do your own country first.
Yes, I mean.
Do many people do it your age?
When you walk the trail, you often come across station owners, or there's people who are connected to the trail in different ways. And when you talk to them, they say all types come through, all ages. So it really, I think it just comes down to...
Young ladies like yourself on their own? Have they seen many?
I don't think they've necessarily seen many, but they exist. They have done it. And
isn't it like a Facebook group or something that you connected to?
Yeah. So basically what happens is once you become a member to the National Trail, you can then access the Facebook group, and then you can also access the maps and guidebooks. It's not a funded organization, so they receive all of their funding through memberships and purchases of maps. So once you access the membership, then you can go to the Facebook group, and it's really important to be a part of that group, because you get a lot of information from past walkers.
Yeah.
And they give you a great amount of tips and details of how to maneuver through obstacles or anything that might come up in the future.
So was there a point when you were thinking about safety and then fear and, oh my God, I'm going to be there on my own at night?
Yeah.
And to be really frank with you, I think the most dangerous thing is the human being half the time.
Yeah.
Were you ever sort of at a point where you were going to pull out?
No, because that was the one thing that kind of I would always go back to was, okay, because you're scared, does that mean you're just not going to do it? Like, that option just wasn't something that I was willing to pursue. Like, I basically was like, my options are do it, face my fears, or not do it. And the option of not doing it just didn't sit well with me.
That's a really good analogy. So we all have two parts, a light and a dark, or whatever, which way you want to say it. So you were having a conversation with both of those sides.
Yeah.
And then you weighed it up.
Yeah.
And the other side was just like, well, it's not an option.
Yeah.
And which meant you actually really decipher that in your brain.
Yeah.
You know, each time something came up, the other side dealt with it.
Yeah.
That's a really good way to do it. It's like a spreadsheet in your
head. A little bit, yeah.
A bit like a spreadsheet in your head.
Yeah.
And so when you mentioned some, you know, you're thinking about the fears, what have some of the fears been? And firstly, where do you start from?
So I started in Cooktown.
Yeah. And then you end where?
You end in Healesville, Victoria.
Alright, so that's a long way, and it's about a 12-month walk.
Yep.
And you can opt to do, there's 12 sections.
Yep.
You've currently done 6.
Correct.
And then you've walked your way into the Northern Rivers. Is that what's happened?
I was actually picked up from the trail. So I crossed over into New South Wales last week, and I was picked up on the trail, and I'm currently on a trail break, an extended trail break, because I'm about halfway now. And
congratulations.
Thank you.
That's a really big state.
It is a really big state. Yeah, yeah. And actually walking into New South Wales was a massive milestone. And I just could not believe.
Victoria would be like, walk in the park.
Well, I just could not believe that I had walked from Cooktown. Yeah, it just blew my mind.
Yeah.
But yeah, so.
Some of the fears along the way was the question.
Yep.
Were any of them realised when you were in the last
6 months? There is animal activity that still gets my heart beating. Naturally, I've always had a little bit of fear of dogs. But
so wild pack dogs.
Yeah, so wild dog. Wild.
Not my little Frank.
No. So, yeah. but larger dogs, I often don't feel immediately comfortable with either.
Yeah, okay, I would agree with you. Yeah.
So. The dogs for me has been the biggest fear for me, but that's not the same for everyone else.
And yeah, so I would have that with horses.
Yeah, okay.
Have you crossed the path of wild horses and wild dogs?
I have, yes, both.
And what happens?
Well, wild dogs I've had encounters with dingoes, and they usually look at you and then they'll kind of look to the side, and then so we'll usually kind of meet each other's gaze, and then the dingo will run off, or in another instance we've kind of moved around each other. Mm-hmm. You just basically don't want to, neither of us want an interaction, we just want to move in our separate ways.
So animals generally, including humans, only attack when they feel like there's an attack.
So one thing I picked up which has been really helpful is that animals usually only will defend themselves or make a move if they're feeling threatened. Mm. Or if they feel cornered. So I always try and make sure when I'm crossing paths with animals that they have enough room to get away, because they usually want to. They don't usually want to be making their way towards you.
Well, are you carrying food with you?
I am, yeah. So I carry up to 10 days worth of food at a time.
What sort of food?
I carry a lot of processed food. I'm pretty much on a high processed food diet, but before I left, I dehydrated a lot of my own food. And so our mutual friend, Michelle, she actually is my supplies officer. And she will often send me out things that I need to the trail when I go into a resupply town, which is usually just a small town that might have a post office or a little general store. And she'll send...
No milk latte.
Sometimes they have coffee, yes. It's nice to get a nice espresso coffee.
Yeah, yeah.
But I'll send her a message and request a few things, and she'll send them out to me, and then I'll pick them up from the post office. So yeah, it's really good. You get to know a lot about little towns, and you meet a lot of people in the townships.
Yeah.
Even though you're moving through kind of quite quickly. So
with back to the animals. With
yes.
The food.
Yes.
No. But yep. I mean, are they? So when you say processed foods, like tins of baked beans, tins of stuff.
I try to avoid tins. I don't really take tins. So when I choose food to carry. I look at the weight. I look at a lot of people choose to take food that is just calories going in, but I prefer a bit of diversity, so I'd like to choose a few different things. But I'll look at their weight, I'll look at what nutrition they're going to give me, I look at what cravings do I usually have while I'm on the trail.
Are the animals wanting to get into your bag? No,
not usually, but although I always keep my pack inside of my tent.
Yeah.
So what I've noticed from traveling through the National Trail and say doing a multi-day walk in a national park is the animals get used to human behavior. Mm. Because there's not a huge amount of people frequenting these campsites along the National Trail, I've been pretty okay with where I'm storing my food. But say if I go on a multi-day walk to a local national park, I know that I have to tie my food up and hang it from a tree because there's little native mice that will attack it and will try and come into your tent. So it's just, they just know that humans are there.
How do you know all that stuff?
Just from experience, just from getting out there and doing it, and actually getting on the Facebook groups and people giving you the heads up of how long ago did you do that trail, and then saying in that particular month we experienced leeches, ticks, or mice that were trying to get our food.
So when you were up in Cooktown,
yes,
and I asked you, because that area is you will see a lot more Indigenous, which is a great thing.
Yes.
In those areas. And I asked you if you had, I want to hear that this national trail has a connection to our Indigenous culture.
Yep.
So along the way, I hope that happens all the way down.
Yeah.
So I'll keep checking in with you.
Yeah.
But tell me about an experience you had up in that area.
Yeah. So within the first week of walking, I opted to take the Crab Track, which isn't always available to trekkers because of weather. So it is a track that you can only access in dry weather. Mm-hmm. I was in the dry season and they had graded most of the track. And so I was able to walk along that part of the trail. And while I was up there, I went and stayed at a campsite called Yindili Campground. And the host of that campground is an Aboriginal elder called CJ. He's also a shaman, and a lot of people seek out his assistance.
Had you heard about him before?
Never before. But I just knew that I had to do that part of the trail because there is another option for you to take, but I just felt like I really needed to do the crab.
You had a calling.
I had a calling. And so yeah, when I got there, I met CJ, and
was he just sitting there waiting for
you? No. He was actually. So they had some campers there, and they were kind of talking to them, and they knew that I was coming because you often on the trail you have to call ahead to a lot of places and to a lot of stations and a lot of landowners so that they know that you're coming through, because often you need to access private land.
Yeah.
So. Anyway, they knew I was coming, and when I got in, CJ was a bit old. He's older, so he was ready for his afternoon nap, and but he decided to put the nap off, and he was happy to show me around on the site, and he took me around through the rainforest, which is close to where he lives, and he showed me some bush tucker. He took me down to the creek, painted me up, gave me some blessings for the rest of my journey. And we got along really well straight away. And
what
we were
a connection.
Yeah, we were talking.
And spiritual.
It was a very special day, and it was what I needed for the beginning of that trail because it's the lead up to commencing this type of trek on this scale is chaos towards the very end, because it was in my for my experience, because I had to do a lot of changes in my life. I had to do a handover with work. I had to pack up a lot of my belongings, and anyway, so
oh my god, that's what I'm doing tonight.
Yes.
Stop. You just reminded me. But
yeah.
That's planning, right?
Yes.
So when you got there, you were saying you didn't know that was going to happen with CJ.
No, I didn't know that. And
he must have felt like this is absolutely the right thing I'm doing here.
Yeah, and we had a really good connection, and he helped me with a particular thing that I was struggling with at the time, which was being able to ask for help. And they helped me out with something. And yeah, it was a really great exchange, because he was grateful for me to come along, because he was happy to have such a nice chat.
And you've got tears in your eyes.
Yes,
right now,
I do.
It's so beautiful. And what I'm thinking there is, you're really getting to know yourself, aren't you?
Oh,
you're really
yeah.
getting to know
yeah.
who, what makes Trin tick.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
what are some of the obstacles in her life
yeah. Yeah.
That she's now turning into positives.
Yeah.
I mean, what better way to do that than go on the trail?
Yeah, it's...
There's so many times, I mean, of course you're going to have times where there's just absolute elation, and then there's going to be times where you've got fatigue and you're really battling with your own demons, would absolutely happen. Well, it would for me. If I'm out there in the middle of nowhere and going, ADHD or whatever it is, but I think I have. See, even that, you're just talking to yourself, aren't you? And... is that kind of what happens to you? Do you have a lot of conversations with yourself?
I do, and I personally think it's a natural human behavior to have conversations with yourself. So yeah, I, I often talk to myself, but it really just depends on the day. Like some days I'm able to daydream quite a bit, and but other days it requires a lot of technical skills. So you are very focused on your foot placement. The terrain can be very difficult, so you are thinking about nothing else except for 1 foot ahead.
Survival.
and then other days it requires a lot of navigational skills, so you can't miss a beat. So
are you using a compass?
I do use a compass, but mostly I'm using GPX files. Sometimes I have to create my own course, but when you access the maps, usually you are able to access the GPX files, which you can just flick through to whatever map system you're using.
So let's talk about the terrain for a while.
Like sure.
I'm wondering if, in my head, I'm thinking, a lot of flat, there's a lot of hills, there's a lot of bush.
Yes.
There's a lot of desert. I don't know.
Yeah, so up north it was a lot of the tropical Queensland savanna. It was hot and dry.
Did you see a bird spider?
I did not see.
Good girl. Good girl. One thing, will I ever do this?
Well, a lot of it can be flat. I remember some days you're just seeing straight ahead, and it almost is like those strange mirages that happen because it's just...
We're talking really flat terrain.
Just flat and long
red?
And straight. Red and like yellows. Then other times it's low shrub with massive anthills. You kind of just... Slowly I've been working my way further south, and I think because of the seasons that are happening right now, things are very green at the moment, which is being beautiful.
I love that you said when I first met you, I mean, what a great way to connect to country.
Yep.
To the country that you were born in.
Yeah.
I just thought that was...
Yeah.
I hope this trail doesn't get super popular and... No, of course, it doesn't matter. It's Indigenous land that we stand.
Yes.
What a great way to connect to country. Do you think that going on this trail and walking for the last 6 months, do you think that looking back, you've learnt so much that you could have done at the start that you haven't? Is there things that you wish you had taken with you, or did you just let it flow?
Probably taken less from the beginning.
How many kilos?
I carry probably more than most.
Yeah, what's more?
I carry 19 kilos.
Oh, wow. I was thinking
25. 19 to 20 kilos, and that's with 3 liters of water and 10 days of food.
Okay.
And a tent and a sleeping bag and some other things that you require, your tech and your gadgets and stuff.
Yeah.
But I was finding at the very beginning that the food portions I was using for my multi-day walks was not enough. So I became very lean.
Wow.
And I could feel that I was trying to pull energy from my muscles. And so I made a decision that I was not going to be able to sustain that, and that I had to change something. And so I started carrying a lot more food.
Wow.
And ever since then, I've been building up the strength to carry that extra load. My feet do feel the weight of that, which is why I'm on this break right now. But I no longer walk into any town feeling like I'm starving, because I just didn't think that that was a healthy way to maintain the next 12 months.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
What sort of things are you eating during the day?
So I usually just snack on bars. I have dried fruits, biscuits. I usually have 2 to 3 hydrolytes a day. Mm-hmm. It's mostly just kind of on the hot days, liquids.
One of your challenges would have been the heat.
The heat was, there was a bit of a heat wave through southern Queensland recently, and that was extreme. That was very difficult. And what happens is you actually have a lot of people who provide assistance and will offer to help. And that's been one of the most magical things that has come out of this trail, is the kindness and generosity of strangers. And I actually had one day where it was the day 3 or day 4 of that heat wave. And I was feeling heat exhaustion, and there was just no shade. There was no shade whatsoever. I was touching my skin and it was hot. The water that I was drinking was boiling water. It was just so hot. And finally came across some shade, and I just dumped my pack, took my shoes off. I just needed to cool down. And this guy came past in a ute and he said, "Are you okay?" And I said, yeah, I'm just cooling down. Yes. And he's like, "Look, I've just got to go up the road, but I'll be back down in a couple of hours. If I can, I'll bring you out some water." I had water, but it was warm and it was kind of water that I'd collected from the creek that I had treated. So it wasn't the nicest tasting water. Anyway, I picked myself back up and got going again. And he came past and he said, "Look, I've brought you some water out," and I just guzzled it down. And so even though you have these like kind of tough moments, the people that you come across are amazing,
and getting through them and getting to the other side just must make you feel so exhilarated.
It really puts your faith back into humanity when you see things like that.
Which is one of the reasons why
you did it, hey? Definitely, especially in this crazy climate that we're living in right now.
And the disconnect,
Well,
the other reason why you did it, which is there's such a connection there with wildlife for you.
Yes.
Which is our mutual friend Michelle. We call her the wildlife warrior around here.
And that's
she let me know about you. So tell me about your connection to wildlife in this area and what you do to protect wildlife here.
Sure. So I met Michelle through the local wildlife group called Tweed Valley Wildlife Carers. When I'm not walking, I am volunteering with them, and I'm also a member with that organisation. That particular organisation uses the assistance of Byron Bay Wildlife Hospital, their veterinary services, which are specialised for all species of native wildlife. And so when I was making plans and preparations for this trek, it was really important for me to find an organisation that was important to me and that I felt was necessary in our community. So when I spoke to the Byron Bay Wildlife Hospital, they were more than happy for me to kind of...
Because they're not usually that well funded.
No, they're not. And what happened was their funding actually got revoked. So that was really disappointing news for us. And that's kind of...
How could you even consider revoking arts and wildlife funding?
It's true. I don't know. Especially when there are so many people who are willing to assist our wildlife and volunteer in a capacity that is a volunteer.
Post the fires and floods and the decimation of our wildlife.
Yes.
Okay, so I should have walked with you.
Yes.
Double or nothing.
The Byron Bay Wildlife Hospital provide a specialised veterinary service, and they rely on funding from the public. It was really important for me to kind of make people aware that this organisation existed and the amazing things that they do and how hard they work, because there's a lot of wildlife rescue organisations in our community that use their veterinary services. And if that veterinary services does not exist, then it is all the wildlife rescue groups in this community that miss out as well.
Wow. And for you, have you set yourself a goal? We can donate, and we'll talk about that at the end. Have you set yourself a goal of what you want to achieve for that hospital?
In terms of how much?
How much you're going to raise and what it will actually do to benefit that hospital in an intern wildlife.
So my hopes is to raise $5,000. If it exceeds that would be amazing. But I wasn't sure how long I was going to be doing the trail for. My hopes is to complete it. So there was always that in the back of my mind. But I feel pretty strong with how far I've come. And so I'm just, you know, I really want to go ahead with making more of an effort to create awareness and support for the Byron Bay Wildlife Hospital. My personal goal would be to see them as a permanent service in our community, because I think
And you know what? One would assume they are.
Yeah. They are amazing. They are a mobile service that can pick up the hospital and take them to disaster zones, which may include fire or flood areas. And like I said, they're an all species hospital. So what they do is, the work that they do is so incredible.
Do you think that's, you've done the 6 months and you're having a little trail break.
Yep.
But do you feel like that passion you have for the hospital and wildlife in general, and we've got some weather impending weather coming in New South Wales right now and fires up north and what have you. WA just got smashed.
Yeah.
Do you think that will be enough motivation to keep you going for the next 6 months?
Absolutely. Yeah. It sounds ridiculous, but
it sounds absolutely perfect.
I I often will tell the wildlife that I come across that, you know, like I'm doing what I can, and there's a whole bunch of people who like are getting on board and want to help you. And
let's just finish there, actually, because I just love that connection back to country, flora, fauna, and just the circle of that, and how you're. That's your drive. When you come across, I know I love animals, man. I just you said it before, when you connect, there's a stare that you have and you look at each other. Has there been any particular moments with animals that they've kind of almost become, I guess, part of you and want to come along with you?
It is interesting. I think when you are walking and when you're outdoors in nature for such an extended period of time, you do become in sync with nature. It's not that I'm necessarily picking up on anything but you do become in sync. And sometimes some birds are curious and they'll hop along with you for a little bit and then they'll go back and do whatever they want to do. There are little things that you see that you might not necessarily pay attention to when you're just living your everyday life.
Well, that's something that Michelle, our mutual friend, said to me the other day, and I go down the beach in the morning, I'm very much connected to the ocean, but she goes, look up, just look up. And so I go outside now and look up all the time, and there's just wildlife and just everywhere, birds everywhere. Birds are really good like that. They just kind of, they're almost going, hi, I'm up here. And she's so amazing at that connection.
Yeah. I mean, that's one of the things that I feel about Australia is that it is the wildlife that really create the backdrop. They bring color and noise and ambience to the backdrop of this beautiful place that we live in. So it's very important for me that these little cute, scaly, feathery friends of ours are looked after.
And you've got time. You've got time on your side.
Yes.
I love it. You are so inspiring. I love that you're this little señorita walking around. And, the Mexican out there in the outback as well. Part of the story is just absolute cracker. So when do you think, no pressure, but when do you think you will get back on the trail?
I will be back on the trail by Christmas. Yeah.
How exciting. Is that how you're going to spend Christmas?
It is. That's what I hope. Yeah, I hope to spend Christmas on the trail. I think it's going to be a unique way to pass Christmas. And that's what I'm hoping
for. Well, I tell you what, when you hit Healesville, because that's when you're heading to, Victoria, we're going to catch up again because... just such a beautiful story, and I want everybody out there to know where they can donate to. You're saying the Tweed Valley Wildlife is also connected to?
So the Tweed Valley Wildlife Carers is a wildlife rescue group in the Tweed Shire, but they use the services of Byron Bay Wildlife Hospitals for veterinary assessments for those animals that come in injured, sick or orphaned. My fundraising efforts go directly to the Byron Bay Wildlife Hospital. If you wanted to donate to them, you could go straight to the Byron Bay Wildlife Hospital website, or you could donate through my walking efforts. And I would recommend looking at my Instagram account, which is 333.walkthere. It's spelled TripleThreeWalkThere, WalkThere. And on that, there are links to my fundraising campaign. It explains why I'm doing it and how you can donate. There's some other articles to look at there, and there's links to the Byron Bay Wildlife Hospital showing what they're doing and what the great stuff that they are doing in our community.
I have never done this in the whole 184 podcasts, which is about 4 years worth. Usually I end the podcast with who and where inspires you around the world. But I'm ending it with who inspires me, which is you. And where, I don't have to ask you because it's Australia.
Yeah.
It's walking that trail. So I'm really happy that I got to help tell your story.
Well, I'm so happy to be here and telling my story. Thank you for having me.
Wow. I'm really inspired by that. And I think you're going to inspire a lot of other women too, that it's okay to get out there and be on your own. And
absolutely. And I hope to, I mean, I don't hope to inspire anyone, but if that happens because of what I'm doing, I'm great. That's wonderful.
Actually, one thing, are you riding along the way?
I document as much as I can, but if you are on my Facebook group, you will see that I have stopped writing, and that's mostly because I have been enjoying the trail so much.
Great excuse.
Yeah.
You'll come back. There's a book in you. It's absolutely. Trin, so lovely to meet you, and I feel like I've known you all my life, and we are right behind you, and let's check in again. In 6 months' time.
I would love that, Kylie.
Encantado, adios.
Adios, Kylie.
Ciao, ciao.